Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello everyone and welcome to this week's edition of the Spanish Football Podcast. I'm Phil Kitchener-Ladies. Sid Lowe is on the line to talk about Spanish football. Hello, Sydney.
Hello, Philip.
How are you? That was quite clipped. You okay?
Oh, was it? Oh, it wasn't meant to be. Sorry.
I'd like a bit more enthusiasm, please. A bit more warmth.
I thought that was quite enthusiastic. Okay. Hello, Philip. How are you? Yeah. Are you all right?
There we go. There's my boy. There's my guy. How are you? All right?
I'm all right, thank you. Yes. I'm trying to get to grips with physics. We struggle enough with maths, so imagine where I'm going with physics. Good grief.
Why is Sid trying to get to grips with physics, you may ask? Well, it will be revealed a little bit later on in the podcast. Sid, you did something absolutely bizarre this weekend, and that was do something not related to football at all. You went to a concert. You went to see Green Day in Paris on Saturday. It's extraordinary behaviour from you.
I know, it's weird, isn't it?
Very weird.
But it was good. It was well worth it.
Okay. I mean, you're making up for it by going to Zaragoza against Real Oviedo this evening. So
yeah, I was at Real Madrid last night. Zaragoza against Real Oviedo this evening. Atletico Madrid against Celtic on Tuesday. And Real Madrid against Braga on Wednesday.
Good. Okay. Let's not repeat any of this missing football matches ever again, please. That's it.
Never.
That's the last one. This is what happened on match day 12. A terrific match day in terms of interesting results. It started on Friday with Las Palmas beating Atletico Madrid by 2-1. I think I read this statistic correctly. The first time since 1987 that Las Palmas have beaten Atletico Madrid at home in La Liga. So a tremendous historic result for the side from the island of Gran Canaria. Massively disappointing for Atletico Madrid, who we'd built them up, title contenders, and they still might be, but this is the kind of game that you have to win if you're going to win the title, and they did not. Speaking of title contenders, Saturday saw Girona beat Osasuna 4-2 at El Sadar. You're already on the hashtag always watch Girona hype train, dear listener. We know that because we've been telling you to do that for a while. But they're not only the most entertaining team in La Liga now, they are now quite literally the best team in La Liga. After 12 rounds of fixtures, they are top. 2 points clear of Real Madrid after another scintillating game. It was genuinely very, very exciting. I was watching this with my six-year-old boy and we were flipping between Fulham Man United and Osasuna Girona because I'd got him a Man United hat because I was at Old Trafford last weekend and he was up for watching the Man United game. And after a while, I said, Daddy, this is really boring. Can we put Osasuna Girona back on? So we did.
I like it.
Yeah, he was rewarded with an entertaining game, as always, from Girona. Then Real Betis beat Mallorca by 2-0. Mallorca, one of a number of teams particularly unhappy at refereeing decisions. This weekend, they were not happy at all with Omar Mascarell's sending off, but it stood and they lost 2-0 to Betis. Celta Vigo and Sevilla played out a 1-1 draw. More on that in just a second and more on Sydney's studying of physics because it comes from that game. We'll leave the discussion to later before we go into it. And then Real Sociedad played really, really well against Barcelona, but they failed to score. And then Barca scored in the 93rd minute, Ronald Araujo heading home after a brilliant ball-in from Gundogan. And Barcelona picked up an unlikely victory against a really good La Real side. And then on Sunday, Alaves beat Almeria 1-0. Big win for Alaves. Almeria remain rock bottom of the table, the only side without a victory in the division. Valencia beat Granada by 1-0. The goal coming from an absolutely ridiculous penalty. I mean, watch it and marvel at how that penalty was given and not taken away by VAR. It's really quite silly.
Yeah, I mean,
sorry, I thought you were going to say something.
No, I was, and then I just realised there was very little I could say. There's one thing I'd like to throw in, because I guess we're not going to talk about it hugely because it is just a ridiculous penalty and that's the end of it. There's one, just one thing I would quite like to throw in. Paco López was upset about this, the Granada manager.
Granada manager.
And rightly so. But I was upset at one of the things that he said, or disliked one of the things that he said, because he mentions Hugo Duro's theatre, you know, his acting, to get this penalty. But he tags on to the end of that line, which he's entitled to do. And to be honest with you, I think that's part of the problem. And this is the victim of it, by the way. I think that's part of the problem, that you're saying, well, he acted, but, you know, the referee can't give that. Now, the referee still can't give it, and VAR certainly still can't give it. But personally, I think part of the problem is that we're saying, oh, Hugo Duro's just doing the right thing. No, he's not. And actually, that should be looked at the VAR and show, right, red card, fuck off, get off the pitch, not enough. That's what it should be. It's the only way it'll end.
That was a really sort of said with real feeling there, that expletive, Sydney. Real feeling. Apologies to any young listeners.
Go on, sling your hook, sunshine.
Yes, who are tuning in. Anyway, to continue the roundup of the results, Athletic Club were absolutely cruising to victory at the Estadio de la Cerámica. They were 3-0 up with 4 minutes to go, but then Gerard Moreno and Alexander Sorloth scored two goals in a minute for Villarreal to pull two goals back. It would have been a very, very unlikely result had Villarreal managed to get a draw out of this game, but they didn't. They are in they're in a bit of a pickle, Villarreal, with Pacheta at the helm. For how much longer, we don't know, but another good win for Athletic Club. And then Real Madrid and Rayo Vallecano in possibly one of the most mismatched cross-city derbies in Europe. Really?
Yeah.
Two teams inhabiting opposite ends of the footballing spectrum. They played out a goalless draw. Real Madrid 0, Rayo Vallecano 0. The first time in 23 years that Rayo have avoided defeat at the Estadio Santiago Bernabeu. Monday night football should be a cracker. Getafe against Cadiz. Two teams with the lowest pass completion rate, the lowest all sorts of metrics, which lead us to deduce that it might not be a very good game. But anyway, who knows? Getafe against Cadiz. So, Sydney, where do we start? Do you want to start with your discussion of physics? Because you've been writing about Celta Vigo and Sevilla. It finished 1-1. Give us a little bit of a breakdown as to why you're talking about physics, what happened in this game, and why Rafa Benitez is so bloody furious.
Yeah, I mean, Rafa Benitez, the context of this, of course, is furious because things are going so badly for Celta. And this is, in a way, it's a culmination of previous results and a culmination also of previous refereeing decisions. Now, I'm very, very reluctant to go down the refereeing route too far because I think it becomes a smokescreen sometimes. And I think even in Celta's case, although they have been three or four moments this season that have been really, really significant that have gone against them, I can understand it. What happened this time round was that Celta were 1-0 up against Sevilla and basically the better side until Tapia got sent off. Now, there's no doubt about Tapia's red card. It's the right decision, and it was actually very foolish from him. They hold on until the 83rd minute. Sevilla score. They make it 1-1. And at that point, down to 10 men in the pouring rain and the wind, they're thinking, well, actually, a draw at home wouldn't be too bad. Rakitic misses a great chance on 91 minutes. It's a brilliant opportunity as well for Pedrosa, isn't it, on 93. And they think, well, we've got away with it. And then, out of nowhere, ball into the box. Duvakis goes down. He's had a little bit of a tug on
Duvikas.
The arm. Duvikas. Yeah, okay. Duvikas goes down and gets a little bit of a tug on the arm from Jesus Navas. And Andith runs over and gives a penalty. Now, I'm going to say something here which Celta fans may not appreciate. And I think Rafa Benitez might not appreciate. But I don't know if it's entirely the point, which is why I'm prepared to say it up front right at the start and just kind of then leave it. I don't think it's a penalty, personally. But the point is that Hernández Hernández gives a penalty. He gets a word in his ear from the referee in the VAR room, 550 kilometres away in Las Rozas, Prieto Iglesias, who has been involved, I think, in two of the big decisions that Celta haven't liked this season, and says, it's not a penalty, and invites him to go and look at the screen. Now, he goes and looks at the screen, and of course, there's loads of people surrounding him, as always, when this happens, and trying to put pressure on him, and the Sevilla player saying, see, it's not a penalty, and the Celta player saying, see, it is a penalty. And he looks at it, and he watches it, and he watches it slow down, and pause, and sped up again, and freeze-framed, and all of those things that they do. And he decides that what he can see isn't enough for a penalty. Now, I say not enough because what he can see is what he did originally see. There's no doubt that he saw what he saw, which is that two players go down and Navas, as he's leaning towards the floor and falling towards the floor, is pulling at the arm. That said, a bit of his shirt is being pulled as well. Right. There's also a slight possibility of Navas with kind of a little bit of a clip around the right ankle. But it's one of those where kind of two players are going for a high ball, which, by the way, neither of them are going to get to. Mm-hmm. It's quite a long way above their heads. They both go to ground. I think it's very light. I personally don't want penalties given for that, but it was given, and I can understand why it was given, because there is definitely a bit of a pull on the arm. The referee decides eventually, and this takes basically four and a half minutes, not to give a penalty. Celta go absolutely wild over it. Aspas starts waving his players to leave the pitch. So I had enough of this. Go on, right, off we go. Had enough of this rubbish. Not having it. Going off the pitch, trying to pull the players off the pitch. Obviously, they don't actually go. Although they might as well have done, and they effectively do, because that penalty was literally the last second of the game. It's 95-55 of a 96-minute game when the whistle is given. When the whistle is blown, rather. So basically, what happens is, in theory, the goal kick gets taken, but basically the goalie puts it down, kicks it, and it's done. And that's it. And the referee blows immediately. See, that's the last kick of the game. An opportunity for them to win for only the second time this season, to win at home for the first time this season, and to come out of the relegation zone. He, Aspas, is furious. He throws the VAR screen to the ground. Now, for what it's worth, I stand with Barry on this. And you know, I'm being partly tongue-in-cheek there, but there is a serious point here. Aspas will probably get a two-game ban for that, right? You get a two-game ban for throwing down an inanimate piece of metal. You don't get a two-game ban for pushing over a player. Like, I mean, we're protecting the machines more than the footballers here. But anyway, that's by the by. It's this sort of symbolic thing. And Rafa, after the game, decides to come up with Newton's Law. And I'm actually going to read this to you. Newton's law says that force is equal to mass times acceleration. And what Rafa says is, this is Newton's law, and I think what we need to do now, because clearly it's not enough, is we need to find a physicist and put him in the VAR room with these guys. Maybe you know if it, he asked the press. And by the way, it's worth pointing this out here. This isn't in response to a cop question in the press conference. This is him sitting down and says, before you go on, before you ask anything, Newton's law says, just incredible. Facts. And he says, yeah, exactly. Well, I was thinking this. It's facts, isn't it? It's very much that. Newton's law says that you measure force in newtons. I don't know how many newtons is enough. Is it 10 or 12 or 20 or 100 newtons enough for someone to fall on the floor? Now, actually, by the way, there's a worthwhile question here, which, because to be honest with you, I don't think there are enough newtons for this to have happened. For this penalty to be given. But the fact is, it was. And so it was given. It was given by the referee. And so Rafa is saying, this is ridiculous. We need a physicist in the VAR room. Obviously, he's being ironic. To help these guys out. To decide to them what counts as a penalty. Maybe we can go to NASA and find the best physicist in the world and put him in the VAR room. Now, of course, what Rafa is getting at, apart from the fact that this decision goes against him, which is the key reason, and the fact that he feels like there's been a build-up of decisions against Celta, because the goal that was ruled out against them in the Girona game last week was absolutely laughable. It really was. Was it last week or the week before? Anyway, last week was laughable. And actually, that was another one where there's virtually no contact and someone has decided there's enough. You're like, come on, how can you decide there's enough there? On this occasion, I think he decides too quickly that it's a penalty. But the point Rafa's making, and I think he's right on this, is that in theory, at least, this is not the kind of thing that VAR intervenes for. If it's a question of degree, now, obviously, it could well be that at some point the CTA comes out and says, no, it's not because of that, it's because the foul on Navas comes first because of the tug of the shirt. Or they might come up with some reason why this is justified. But basically, as VAR decides, the degree of contact is not enough. And Benitez's point is, how can you do that from a screen? How can someone in an office somewhere do that? This decision has gone against us. And of course, it's recurring. Aspas says basically the same. He says, what's he going to the VAR screen for? What's he going to see that he hasn't seen on the pitch? There is nothing there. Now, for what it's worth, you are going to see a bit. But you totally denaturalise the nature of the game, I think, if you see it in slow motion, sped up and slowed down and stopped and so on. The curious thing for me in this, I don't know about you, is that I think what the VAR tends to do is actually exaggerate the degree of contact, not minimise it. And on this occasion, VAR was used, in my view, to sort of head in the right direction. But I think it's the wrong reason, because you're totally removing the authority of the referee. So that's why Rafa was going on about physics.
Brilliantly explained, very thorough explanation as to why Rafa Benitez was going on about physics. Sid has obviously been writing about this subject today, and you can read it on the pages of The Guardian if you'd like more detail on that. Celta in all sorts of trouble. And
well, that's the key to all of this as well, by the way. You know, in a way, this is just the excuse to say, well, what the bloody hell is happening to Celta? And I think Celta would be ill-advised to only put it down to refereeing decisions, albeit they think there's been a huge amount of them go against them.
They feel that there's some kind of, if not campaign, but certainly a lot of injustice has gone their way.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Going for your first ever run around the park. Literally running errands all over town. Running for the finish line and your personal best. If you run, you're a runner. Find the shoes and clothes to run your way at newbalance.com/running. New Balance. Run your way.
Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere. Like when your fantasy league meets up at your house. Everything's great until the hot plate gets too hot for the tablecloth. Now your kitchen's up in smoke. And if you don't have the right home insurance coverage, the cost to fix this is anything but a fantasy. So switch to Allstate, save money, and get protected from mayhem like this. Not available in every state. Based on coverage selected, subject to terms, conditions, and availability. Savings vary.
Let's move on and talk about Real Madrid against Rayo Vallecano, please, extensively. That goalless draw at the Bernabeu, not just because it's my team, but also you were there and you witnessed it firsthand. Before we have that discussion, do want to tell you guys about patreon.com/TSFP, where our patrons get a Q&A podcast every Tuesday, a bonus podcast every Thursday or Friday, and twice a month they get TSFP Presents or Rincón Cultural, our special extra podcast. So come and join us for around €4 a month. It's good value. You get loads of content about Spanish football and Spain, access to our Discord as well, lots of stuff for our patrons. Real Madrid 0, Rayo Vallecano 0. If Fede Valverde puts away the very, very presentable chance he has inside the opening few minutes, this game is probably a little bit different, but he didn't. And after that, I think Dimitrescu, the Rayo goalkeeper, made one other really good save from a Joselu effort.
Yeah.
That's kind of it. I don't think there was, I mean, Rayo were more or less pretty comfortable here.
Yeah, I think Rayo managed the game pretty well. A word, by the way, on Radu, who I knew
we were going to do a whole section on him later, Sid. Don't worry, I've got that. Oh, okay. All, but if you want to do it now, we can adelantar it now. We can bring it.
I mean,
forward.
Look, in a way, I can kind of liquidar. I can liquidate this section in one word and say fast, because it's not often that a guy stands up to Vinicius for speed and manages to get the better of him, to be perfectly honest with you.
Andre Ratiu playing his first ever game in La Liga.
Yeah, I knew nothing about him at all, to be honest with you.
He joined this summer from Huesca. He had played in the Cup in midweek, done well, scored a goal and was rewarded with a start. Obviously, at right back, Ivan Bayou basically plays every single minute of every single game. But now he's got competition from Andre Ratiu, who made a very, very impressive debut, keeping Vinicius, for the most part, pretty quiet.
Yeah. Yeah, and Madrid were largely, I think saying that they were kept quiet would be a step too far from my point of view, because they created sufficient chances to have won it, but you're right, not very, very clear ones. There's a Rodrigo shot that slips just past the post. There's one that Vinicius doesn't quite get to at the far post. There's a header from Joselu, I think, which goes just wide. But you're right that Dimitrescu wasn't making outrageous saves, except for that one-handed one in the first half at the near the crossbar, as you say, from a Joselu shot. There's a lovely bit of footwork from Bellingham and a shot that goes just over. But what I thought was a reasonably good first half from Real Madrid became a pretty sluggish second half. And I felt that Rayo actually dealt with them reasonably well. They had most of the ball. They had loads of shots. I think it was 20 plus shots, but not very many where you thought, yeah, absolutely should have scored there.
Carlo Ancelotti said they played well. Ha sido un buen partido.
Yeah, and they played okay. They did play okay. It wasn't terrible by any means, but it wasn't a great performance.
No Jude Bellingham with a late winner this time. And actually, I think he was playing a bit injured throughout the game because he picked up a shoulder injury early on. He was down for about 4 or 5 minutes. It looked like he wasn't going to be able to continue. It was quite strange, actually, because if you saw the replay, it looked relatively innocuous. It seemed difficult to see where he'd picked up this seemingly serious injury. But then he picked himself up, got on with it. I think he had his shoulder bandaged up for part of the second half. But he wasn't able to save Real Madrid. And I think the headline in the Marca today, and obviously our patrons also get Al's fantastic paper reviews, so go and check that out. But the headline on Marca today is "No Bellingham, no party." Maybe referring to Real Madrid's seemingly dependence on Bellingham's goals.
Yeah, and I think there's a genuine issue there, and we've alluded to this quite a bit this season, haven't we? We've talked about how it would have been until this weekend, I think, a little bit over the top to see Bellingham as a problem. But I suppose this weekend bears out that there is a question mark there. But we've talked a lot about the dependence on him, the failure to score so far, or score sufficiently often, from Rodrigo and Vinicius. Rodrigo's only scored once in La Liga. That was the opening day. He's got one in the Champions League. Vinicius, off the top of my head, I must confess, I can't remember how many he's got. I think it's only two. It might be three. And Ancelotti had
said... In La Liga?
Yeah, I think it's just two, isn't it?
He's got two. Yeah.
And Ancelotti actually said in the pre-match press conference for this game, look, by the end of the season, Rodrigo and Vinicius will have more than Bellingham. They will have overtaken him. And we do need more goals from him. And he said after the Clásico last weekend, he said, really pleased with Bellingham. But it was slightly pointed. He said, but I need goals from the others, or we need goals from the others. Now, Joselu's return, I think, is pretty good for a guy who's a kind of a backup striker. But it's still not huge.
Well, he started
numbers.
Last night.
He started last night. He did start last night and had the chances, I suppose. It's, you know, as I say, it's his shot that was saved. It's his header that goes narrowly past the post. But I think they have had a dependency on Bellingham. And I suppose the question mark really isn't numerical, or isn't purely numerical in terms of, is it about without Bellingham's goals, no one else scores? I suppose the broader and deeper question is, has the desire to accommodate Bellingham and get the best performances from Bellingham created a situation which is problematic for the others? Because if this is purely just about levels of form, and at the moment Rodrigo and Vinicius aren't scoring, but let's face it, eventually they will. And, you know, there'll be a contribution from midfield. Although you look at those midfielders, you don't see many goal scorers, do you? Fede is the one goal scorer you see. And because, you know, Camavinga doesn't score many, Tchouameni's not going to score many, Kroos and Modric don't really score very many. They probably get three, maybe four league goals a season in a good season. And so you look at it and you think, is there a risk that building a team around Bellingham has diminished the presence of those two, or is it just about form? If it's just about form, no problem. I think it is worth looking at the kind of the structural implications of this. And again, I'm absolutely not going down the route of saying Bellingham is a problem, but of course it's worth, I suppose, some thought to be given to that.
So Real Madrid dropping points at home against Rayo Vallecano. A famous victory for Rayo, a 0-0 victory for Rayo. I think we can frame it like that. Absolutely no pro-Rayo bias on this podcast ever.
Definitely not.
What that result means is that Girona, as we said, are outright clear leaders at the top of the table. And next week, it's Rayo against Girona in Vallecas. Girona managed by Rayo legend Michel, legendary player, former manager as well. He'll get a tremendous reception. Speaking of Real Madrid not scoring goals, do you know who do score goals, Sid?
Well, Girona do, and a lot of
Girona!
Them.
Just top scorers in La Liga. 29 goals. 11 different players have scored for them as well. And if you try and analyse the success of Girona, you know, people have been saying, so, you know, who are their good players? You know, who stand out? Who's the star for them? You wouldn't necessarily pick one player, would you? I mean, Savio's been impressive. Dovbik has got a good return from goals. Alex Garcia's been tremendous. Yangel Herrera's chipped in with goals and big performances. But it's a team, isn't it? It's not one guy sort of carrying them.
It absolutely is a team, and forgive me because I don't have the statistics in front of me, but one of the things that I think bears that out is if you look at it, they don't take as many shots as that number of goals suggests. They're a team that create clear chances and take them. So that you're getting chances that are being kind of collectively built. You're getting chances that when it comes, when someone takes on a shot, it's because there's the goal in front of you. There is a real sense of clarity about how they approach the way they play. I guess if you're going for one, yeah, Savinho is the one, isn't he? Because he's exciting, because we didn't know very much about him, because he's young, because he's very dynamic, because he makes a lot of things happen. But you're right, it's all over the pitch. And every game you see someone else, or every game you feel like you're seeing someone else. And what you're seeing, I guess, is a structure that works and a set of players that understand the game in seemingly very similar ways. And they're brilliant and they are not there by chance. Now, does that mean they'll stay there? Probably not. But you know what? I'm only really saying probably not because it's Girona. Hmm. You know, if let's say for argument's sake, the exact same performances and the exact same set of results had been done by Real Madrid,
yeah,
I'd be saying, yeah, they're going to win the league.
Yeah, I mean, Real Madrid didn't because have they're convincing players by
no, but what I mean is the purely on the evidence of what we have seen.
Yes,
they are the best team in Spain.
Yes,
and they are playing the best football in Spain, and there is no reason to look at them and say this won't continue, except for the fact that it's Girona. And these guys, we don't know these guys like we know, you know, Lewandowski or Bellingham or Modric or Pedri or whatever, you know.
Yes.
But the evidence in front of our eyes, the empirical argument here, is they are the best team in Spain. There's no two ways about this. This isn't a fluke. This isn't a whole load of ropey wins. This isn't a team that's sneaking through. It's not a team that's creating comebacks. Well, actually, there's been a fair few comebacks. Mm. But it's not seeing a team that's creating comebacks because they're lucky. Mm. It's a team that's creating comebacks because, in the end, the weight of logic leads them to those victories.
Obviously, it's all going to come crumbling down next week in Vallecas, but they can enjoy it while
it's
lasting.
Do you know what? It's the kind of place where you could imagine it, couldn't you? And I really love the idea of Michel going back to Vallecas as top of the league.
Yes.
Really, like that.
Yeah, yeah. Hard to overstate how highly thought of he is.
They love him. In Vallecas. He is Michel the second of Vallecas, which is funny considering it's an independent people's republic. But, you know, that's another issue.
It is. Let's talk briefly about what happened at the Real Arena as well. The game that you were supposed to be at but missed to go and see Green Day. Honestly, Sydney. But La Real played really well in this game. I mean, really, really well. They were so, so good. I guess the lack of a clinical 20 goal a season striker is perhaps going to be their undoing this season in terms of pushing for top four, or even, you know, them being something like a Girona, because this starting 11 that they've got is a really exceptional team. But yeah, they didn't take their chances and Barcelona scored right at the end.
I got a message from a mate and it just said, are you at the Real Arena, mother of God? And then the next message just said, mind you, Barca will probably win 1-0. So it was.
Who is this friend? Wow.
Exactly.
He seems to know something about Spanish football. Yeah.
And it was extraordinary. I mean, I promise you, listeners, those of you who haven't seen it, those of you who have seen it, know that this promise is true. I promise you I'm not exaggerating. Real Sociedad could have been 3-0 up after 3 minutes and 4-0 up after 12, I think it is. I watched this game back yesterday and it's just an absolute mullering that Barcelona take. But Real Sociedad are really a really, really, really good team. And there's that comment, isn't there, that Laporta got caught on camera, I think, or at least I saw the headline, I must admit, I haven't watched the video, of him saying to a fan, well, luck of the champions, sorry, you completely deserved it. I think everybody accepted that. I think Xavi was talking about that as well, saying, you know, last week we played very well against Real Madrid and didn't win. This week we were not good enough. In fact, I think he described the first half an hour as unacceptable. Mm. And Real Sociedad are a really good team. They rob the ball very high. They force you into mistakes. They create chances. And yeah, to speak to your point about what you do up front, it's a curious one, isn't it? Because they have signed strikers. And yet they like the idea of Oyarzabal as a false number nine. The strikers, it hasn't always quite worked. I wonder if that's partly a product of the way that they play. On the face of it, I don't look at them and think they're a team that are not built for strikers. I think look at them and think they're a team that a good striker could have a good time of this. But, you know, they weren't 100% sure about Saul Otha, although I thought he had a good season last year. Obviously, Alexander Isak, who was an unusual striker, who kind of went in waves, got sold for a lot of money. That was an economic decision. You've got Carlos Fernandez, who you're sometimes unsure about. Omar Sadiq, who's a very unusual kind of footballer, this sort of slightly lolloping figure, but actually scores really good goals and tends to miss the slightly easier ones. And in a way, I think Oyarzabal is a decent solution as a centre forward, not least because it allows you to have two wingers who are not one of them doesn't have to be him. So it allows you to play, for example, Barrene and Take, who's having a brilliant season. But yeah, you do look at them sometimes and think, how on earth are this team not winning more games? Because they're so good to watch. They seem to have a little bit of everything. And I think actually the Champions League is demonstrating that for us.
Shout out to Emmanuel Alguacil and I think Mikel Oyarzabal as well. Both of them spoke after the game about a possible penalty from Jules Koundé on Oyarzabal.
Which I think is a penalty, to be honest.
Yes, but I think neither of them got involved in the conversation. And Emmanuel Alguacil said, if we lost, it's because the opponent was better, and that's it. Didn't get involved in any controversy about we needed to be given a penalty, and it's an absolute disgrace, and VAR, and blah blah blah. Just get on with it.
Yeah, and he said as well, didn't he? Post game, he said, "I'm getting a bit tired of the other managers saying we've played really well, and when we don't win, I want to win." And I think he did. It was very noticeable how keen he was to turn the focus on his team's shortcomings.
Yeah,
he's a curious man, Emmanuel, because he is tough as old boots, kind of behind closed doors.
Yeah,
and he will have had a word with his players, and yet he's very. He's a kind of weird charisma, hasn't he? That is sort of an uncharismatic charisma.
Yeah.
In the public eye, at least.
Yeah, I guess it's grown, hasn't it? Yeah, his charisma. But yeah. Okay. Well, listen, we're going to leave it there. Thanks very much for joining us, dear amigos. Sydney is off to watch the mighty Real Oviedo this evening in the Segunda División. So enjoy that, Sid.
I shall certainly try. I don't know if it's going to be possible, though.
Yes. Yes, it might be a stretch too far. Oviedo, who are currently treading water in 14th place in the division. So,
so a couple of wins and then things will look better. But then a couple of wins is the question, isn't it?
Mm. Enjoy, and we'll speak again over at patreon.com/TSFP the rest of the week. Bonus podcast coming up later on. Q&A podcast coming out tomorrow. Loads of content there, so make sure you join us. Adios.
Cheerio.